101, a version 1 podcast.
Today I'd like to welcome Joan Cahill to the 101 podcast. Joan is a senior researcher and principal investigator with the Centre for Innovative Human Systems at the School of Psychology at Trinity College Dublin.
Thank you, Ken. I'm delighted to be here.
Joan, just to start, can you tell me a bit about the work that's done at the Centre for Innovative Human Systems?
Yes, of course. So we're based at the School of Psychology at Trinity College Dublin, and we're a group of about 20 researchers, mostly interdisciplinary researchers, spanning engineering, psychology, computer science, design, and primarily psychology, of course. And our research is largely at the nexus of people, technology and process delivery. Mainly it's focused on technology-based supports and interventions in healthcare, aviation, road transport, other process industries.
A big area in this is ethical AI. Can you give us a bit of an overview of what that is and what the effect is on the economy and society?
Yes, of course. Ethical AI is largely investigating issues around human identity and behaviour, issues around privacy, the meaning and value of technology, how it addresses aspects of well-being, how it changes or influences societal change. It relates to ideas around ontological design, which is focused on the relationship between human beings and life worlds. And I suppose it's premised on the idea is that when we introduce new technology, the technology both changes how we exist in the world and how we behave in the world, and it has a possibility of influencing our values.
So it's coming more and more out of the research arena and into mainstream businesses have to adopt and implement it. Can you talk a little bit about that or what you're seeing?
Yes. Well, certainly in my experience over the last 20 years, human factors as a discipline, which can include and often includes ethical dimensions of technology, did sort of, start or have its origins in the research space. So research coming out of certainly here in Ireland, European projects. But now it's certainly moving into industry, and the methodologies that are being used are becoming more accepted in industry. And we see more academic and industry collaborations, some with state aid, some purely funded by industry. But this whole movement is growing in terms of acceptance and growing in terms of requirements, certainly for safety critical systems. So looking at aviation and healthcare, where there are regulatory frameworks which need to be complied with in terms of the requirements for technology and demonstrating that they meet, that beyond being fit for purpose, that they actually are ethically aligned, that there's no challenges in terms of data protection or cybersecurity risks, or what for me is even more important, challenges in terms of human identity and what the new technology means for the human experience, if it's going to positively impact upon human experience and the human condition, if there's going to be real tangible benefits or if there's a potential for harm. So ethics is largely concerned with, balancing benefits and harm, so that's where the moral case comes about. So we can look at technologies in this context, and I think this is what it attempts to do.
Okay, so one of the examples I spoke about before was an example for that you're working on the healthcare space, and it was a project using IoT and machine learning and AI, and you're obviously one of the key implementers into that project. So what elements came out beyond the technology in the human systems side of that? What findings did you have?
Okay, well, just to explain to our listeners, I'm involved in an industry collaboration with an Irish-based medtech company, Winview Healthcare, and they have technologies that are implemented in hospitals and also in residential care environments. And linking into, I suppose, what we know from our own policy here in Ireland and Sláinte Healthcare, the community system as well. But these technologies are linked to ideas of personal monitoring and self-management of healthcare, but also promoting relationship-centered care. So, for example, in a residential environment, which in Ireland we would treat this as like a nursing home or an assisted living facility, you might have technologies that assess the risk of an older adult in terms of are they at risk of a fall or, a pressure sore. Also technologies that enable them to move freely in their environment, where you might have someone who might be at risk of wandering, potentially an older adult with dementia, that they can wander safely and freely so that they're not a challenge to their own autonomy. So technologies can be quite positive. But there is the element of surveillance, of the sort of Big Brother aspect. Mm. You know, that if you're watching somebody or monitoring them, is this going to hamper their well-being? And particularly if you're watching such that staff have a different kind of workload and maybe are less likely to observe a person, you know, come into the room and put their eyes upon the person, touch their hand, have some kind of, you know, real one-to-one interaction with them. This could indeed hamper their well-being. So these are the issues that you need to investigate. So as we know, technology can be, you know, introduced for very positive reasons, but it could also be co-opted for certain negative reasons. And there are concerns, you know, staff have concerns about being monitored, and these are legitimate concerns. They've concerns that these technologies are being introduced on the surface to improve the quality of care, but actually in reality to reduce staffing. And these are staff that are already, you know, quite burnt out. Now, obviously, you know, healthcare organisations have, you know, costs that need to be addressed, you know, and, you know, healthcare costs are significant, and we need technologies that can enable person-centred care delivery, but, you know, tackle the real issues around costs and delivering, you know, quality person-centred care. So these would be some of the issues. My concern about these technologies, and I feel in some part quite positive, but I do have a concern about how they impact upon human identity and certainly issues around privacy and data protection. Recently, I was reading something about, so video, for example, is becoming more prevalent in hospitals, certainly in the US, and particularly in acute contexts and ICU. We see video already. It's considered unacceptable. You know, CCTV is considered unacceptable, but in certain environments, it's considered more acceptable, you know, psychiatric settings. And this is where you're looking at, you know, patients that are at risk to harming themselves, or aggression towards staff, or monitoring to check, you know, medicines compliance and these kinds of things. But my, so I was reading something that was suggesting that you could repackage video monitoring as not about sensing in the sense of just the video capture, but as a data collection device. And if you were to think about it differently, maybe you could sell the benefits more. And actually, in thinking about differently, you could define requirements so that it would behave in a certain way that would deliver these benefits. So, you know, you might have rules around how this video is viewed by other people, how it's encrypted, whether, you know, certain aspects of a video image are pixelated so it can't be fully seen, you know. And then it is more about data capture than about, you know, an actual full image of a person and potential encroachments and intrusion, you know. So does that make sense?
Yeah. So I suppose some of the stuff you're talking about there is that, you know, to go back to the healthcare example, is making sure that we're considering the technology is great, but what's the adverse effect? They're taking the human out of the system at times.
And it's the human, the human in terms of, you know, both the patient and the service provider.
Yeah.
Because many nurses and clinicians and care assistants, they actually do the job because they want to provide care, which is mediated by the person, not by technology, you know.
Okay.
So, and they're, you know, that the idea of the personal aspects, the personal touch, being responsive. If the responsiveness is technology mediated, that actually changes their role, you know. So it's not just simply their surveillance, but whether they get the same purpose out of their job.
Okay.
You know, so you, I suppose one of the things that in human factors research that we look at is a stakeholder evaluation based approach. And we look at how does this technology work for different stakeholders? So in a hospital setting, we're looking at patients and families. We're looking at those who provide care, clinicians and nurses and care assistants. Then we're looking at the organization. And there's different benefits and potential needs for each of these cohorts. And it's negotiating those and delivering something for everyone and bearing in mind what might be conflicting goals. So an organization might want to monitor, you know, for example, hand hygiene and care compliance and certain procedures and standards. Staff primarily want to reduce their workload and get through the day without an adverse event. Patients want to be cared for and experience, I suppose, what care is really. Care is about monitoring, but it's that in-person monitoring and it's observing, but not necessarily surveillance. So, you know, it's trying to figure that, navigate that path. And it is quite complex, but it's not insurmountable. And certainly I would say that human factors methods provide a means or a window into negotiating these different benefits and requirements for different cohorts.
You've spoken about the human factors. So what are the ways of the best practice for that we should be thinking about in implementing building systems? So how do you build that into a process to make sure it gets considered?
I suppose it's self-evident, but you need to work with human factors practitioners so that you can properly use theory and principles and methods that deliver these outcomes. So outcomes around well-being and ethics. I think that you really need to look at the composition of the team. So for example, most recently I was working on a project, and we can talk a little bit more about it later, around driverless vehicles and looking at changing the paradigm and, I suppose, looking at assistance as well as full automation. And the team comprised clinicians, experts in aging, psychologists, experts in terms of sensors and data fusion, so AI and machine learning experts. So a range of different competencies, and actually getting that skill set in a room to work on a project is your starting point. Then you obviously need proper processes. And, you know, I've worked with engineers and clinicians, and we all have different processes, and we have different even concepts of how the work needs to be done. So that's with an interdisciplinary team that is often difficult, but you do establish processes for gathering requirements and validating requirements for modelling designs and evaluating. I certainly use a lot of ethnography, do interviews and observations. A particularly important instrument I use is personas and scenarios. And certainly I've used these in the context of Scrum methodologies, working with Scrum teams who have 2-week turnarounds in terms of deadlines for requirements and producing some demonstration. And it's quite possible in terms of bringing all the team together to focus on, you know, the person, so that persona, and what is their scenario. But gathering, you know, I like to describe it as an evidence map. You know, so building evidence. And certainly many of my projects are in healthcare, and evidence-based decision-making and evidence-based technology requirements is where it needs to be at. So these, techniques facilitate that. But any kind of technology, and I suppose this is very important to be aware of, it works within the context of an operational process, and it also changes that process. So you need to look at the existing process and the potential transformation. And one of the useful things in human factors is it looks at the relationship between people and performance and process and technologies and underpinning dimensions of this. So for example, culture. So if you're designing a reporting tool to be used by clinicians in theatre, you know, if there's an adverse event, you need to look at safety culture and debriefing processes and what the rules of engagement are for these, because you can't simply just focus on the user interface and say we can put in a few combo boxes, which are drop downs, which describe different types of adverse events. And, you know, we can make it nice and quick and easy with data entry. You actually need to look at the culture for reporting, you know, and what are the barriers and how can you address this in terms of the interface design? Or if the barrier is around workload, how can you make reporting more accessible at different points in the operation? You know, so it's these kinds of issues. So human factors goes beyond the user interface and looks at processes and culture, and it also looks at training. So it's a much more holistic view of technology development and situating it in a bigger picture, I suppose.
Okay, so there's a lot around the specification, the methodologies, but having the right people in the room at the right time, both at the requirements and at the testing.
Yeah.
You mentioned ontological design.
Yes.
I'm interested in that term and maybe how it affects one of the projects that you worked on around autonomous driving or autonomous vehicles. Can you talk a bit about that? Maybe explain it.
Yes. So I always like to talk about ontological design, and particularly because my background before it was ever psychology was in philosophy, and I would have studied a lot of French and German philosophers, and particularly Heidegger, who is a phenomenologist, and he has a whole idea on being in the world. And Heidegger posed this question back in, you know, the 1900s around, you know, is technology something we should be for or against? And really his idea was that, yes, we have choice. You know, it's not a case of being for and against. It's about the choices we make in how we implement technology. And this, I suppose, basic idea that technology changes what it means to be and what it means to be human. So technology is normative. You know, there are values that we can associate with technology, and people forget that, you know, and that we need to consider this. So the idea that we're, you know, we are designing technology, but we are also being designed by technology. And when I say that to people, and I casually introduce this, you know, in meetings on projects, and sometimes I get, you know, laughter, and sometimes I get puzzled faces, and it's really, but are we being designed? And I think actually, if you were to look at the reach of AI now, and certainly in the last 2 years, I think, yes, we are being designed, because it is having profound influences in terms of healthcare and how decision-making is operating, in terms of, you know, robotic companions in people's homes, in terms of car technology and automation in all aspects. And we need to consider this reality that we are being designed.
Can you give me an example maybe from your work in autonomous cars, autonomous vehicles, how that might play through in practical terms.
Yes, of course. So recently, over the last year, I've been involved in a project which is around driving assistance, but it links to automated vehicles and connected vehicles. So the project is run by Trinity with the Adopt Centre. And really, we were requested by industry, I'm a particular industry group, to make a case for a new car that would promote safety, but at the same time address issues around fitness to drive and driver persistence. So this is where you have older adults who might have certain health conditions that would impact upon their ability to drive safely. And one of the things that we know from research is that, you know, driving cessation has a negative impact upon an older adult's psychosocial health. You know, it reduces their independence and their ability to move freely around the community. So mobility is actually something that's very important for your psychosocial health. So if you like, you could frame these two issues, you know, road safety and the safety of the driver and pedestrians and other drivers and driver persistence as, you know, two opposing goals. So really our job was to figure out, well, how can we develop a technology system that would promote these two goals or enable both potentially opposing goals? And this was tricky. So really, one aspect of my research was looking at the ethical dimensions. So the starting point for this was, well, how will we pose the problem? Let's get the research question right, or the problem statement for this technology. And really, after considerable research, we realised actually the problem statement or the question we are seeking to answer or the brief, the technology design brief, was around developing a system that could do some form of health monitoring in a car to assess the driver's state and provide a level of assistance or intervention based on this assessment of the driver's state, you know. But really what we wanted to do was to promote self-efficacy and active aging and to normalize aging and not to treat aging as a disease, you know. So really the system should focus on, you know, remaining abilities as opposed to diminished capacities. So a fully automated system would have a very different effect in terms of the driving experience, whereas a system that has different levels of, provides different levels of support depending on assessment via sensors and using machine learning of the driver's state would provide the right level of task support or full intervention if there's a health event. But it would enable drivers and promote their, you know, their role in society and promote their identity and avoid a sort of an ageist reduction of the older adult driver. And I think this is really important, you know. So we've come up with a different idea for what this technology might do and how it might promote active aging and successful aging. And we're not against, you know, full automation, but it's full automation in the right situation. And one of the positive things that, you know, I learned about AI and machine learning is its impact in terms of personalization. So for an older adult that has, different sensory abilities, you know, different abilities in terms of their vision and hearing, the personalization can be used and machine learning to identify suitable communication feedback mechanisms. Also, it can be used to sort of tailor the type of task support for particular driving routes and these kinds of things. So machine learning provides huge benefits for older adults and can support driver persistence, which has these quality of life and well-being outcomes. So here you have, when I say sort of an ethical perspective, you can develop a technology which has well-being and protections for identity and rights built into the system outcomes.
So how can our listeners learn more on this topic?
I often look at the New York Times and there's wonderful articles on, you know, kind of societal issues concerning technology. And when you read them, you go, oh my goodness, that's so obvious. Why didn't I, you know... So that, you know, that would be, you know, a good starting point. You know, like the grey literature isn't so bad after all. And, the dense human factors literature isn't a starting point, but actually projects are a starting point because ultimately in projects, we have to make design decisions.
Yeah.
You know, and then we have to reflect on those. And did we make the right decisions? And what was the evidence base for these? And what were the principles? And if you look at decisions around driving, you know, what the various different, you know, with automated and connected cars, you know, the various groups that have, you know, car manufacturers, you know, the design decisions they've made. What do we think of those? I would look at examples and artifacts.
So these are like retrospectives you're talking about on stuff that's happened or stuff the project...
Stuff that's happened and is happening. And, you know, trends, you know, like say Watson, you know, when I was, you know, recently someone was asking me about AI in clinical settings. And I said, have you looked at Watson? Will you Google Watson and what it does and its reach and where they're at in terms of, validating how Watson works and safety and reliability and validating the human dimensions? Do you see enough about the human dimensions.
So I think you're actually, if I kind of paraphrase, you're someone saying, look at the projects, look what's out there, but put a lens of human factor on it.
Yeah. Say, are they actually? I would say, are you posing the right questions? Mm. Are you answering them adequately? How have you answered them? How have you demonstrated benefit? Mm. Give me an example. What is that benefit? Is that really a benefit for that group versus this other group? Is that not going to cause a negative consequence for this other group? So how have benefits been adjudicated? You know, how have needs been defined? You know, so I suppose another thing that I find useful when I talk about my research is say, well, my research starts from, you know, it's human factors, but it's about progress. So you have all this technology and it's available, but how does it deliver progress? And, you know, the OECD have said that actually when we're defining progress, we need to look at quality of life and well-being. You know, so what does it, beyond GDP, what does it actually mean? What kind of progress? So progress in terms of lived experience and improving the experience of older adults in society, or people with disability, or, you know, whether you're looking at, you know, electronic voting systems, actually ensuring that democracy works, you know, that kind of progress, you know, and assessing it, you know, and using human factors and methods to assess. I think that's a starting point.
So Joan, thank you for joining us today on the 101 podcast. Really interesting.
Thank you, Ken, and thanks for giving me the opportunity to talk about human factors and its reach.
Thanks for listening to the 101 podcast today, and for more episodes, visit version1.com.
Thank you for listening to the 101 podcast. If you would like more information about any of our podcasts or our guests, visit us at version1.com/1-0-1.